Good evening. We're going to discuss tonight the issue of going back home, be it for a visit or to live, going back to the place we grew up. It could be the country we grew up, it could be the family we grew up with. After we have evolved at Mechon Meir, either become a ger or chozer b'tshuva. Now this is an issue which has a lot of halachic aspects. Eating in the kitchen where people don't keep kosher, eating in the home where people don't keep kosher, people don't tivoke them. We're not dealing with the halachic aspect of this. The halachic aspects have to be left for another class. The issue I want us to think about and discuss tonight is the possibly more potent issue of maintaining our self-identity, maintaining who we are when we contend with our past, when we contend with our family or previous family for those who become gerim, and when we have to come in contact with our old friends or old acquaintances. Now, I wrote a letter about this subject, which I'm going to give out shortly, and then we'll read out loud. I didn't finish the letter yet. My thoughts are in process. The letter covers the first step of the letter, and it ends basically before we reach a resolution. We try to identify the issues. But I would like to begin by asking you to tell me which issues you feel we should cover in this class. And we'll go around the room, each person can raise the issues, and then we'll give out the letter, and we'll see if we've covered some of the issues in the letter, at least in identifying the issue. So we'll begin with you, Michael, and we'll go around. You don't have to say anything, but if you have things that you'd like us to deal with, so I'd appreciate it if you tell me.
I don't think I have.
If you guys come up with nothing, I'll give you the letter and then we'll start talking. Yeah.
I study also in Hebrew classes. I still have troubles with brachot and food. Some people say on Bafli, some people say shakoni avigdor, and some of them say
It has to be connected to this topic. This isn't the regular question answer. Connected to this topic.
What are you asking us?
I'll give you examples. One issue that people sometimes have to contend with is that their family will try to engage in a philosophical dispute. Sometimes the family is very apprehensive. They don't feel like they can connect with the person. They feel like, hey, you're a different person now. Do you love us anymore? Do you care for us? How come you don't do the things you used to do? So these are examples of things that I thought you would bring up. I'm leaving it to you. Whatever you don't bring up, I'll deal with the things I think of. Avram, go ahead.
About what kind of issues?
So you'll see. You'll see if you have what to say later. You'll tell us. Yeah.
What about let's say you have friends that aren't Jewish, but they don't press you to do your old ways. You keep kosher around them. You keep all the laws and halachas and everything, and you still go out and have a good time, but you don't do anything that's...
Okay,
you
know, we'll try to deal with that.
Related.
Okay, anything else?
I think of anything else, I'll get back to
you. Okay, yeah.
Wanting to get married early, but your family doesn't think you're old enough. How old are you? 22.
That's pretty old.
You're old enough.
You're old buggy.
That's kind of young.
Okay.
Got a job? Got a good job? What?
Arthur?
You're what?
College.
For example, if you pay a visit to the place where you have been working before and they propose you to drink a tea with them, so if you don't do it, they will be a little bit disappointed, and it will make a break connection between the people. So how should we react on this? On such stuff?
I Okay. Anything else? You? No? Yoshua?
My biggest issues are when dealing with people feeling prejudged. And by a lot of times by put on the feet and give up, people automatically reject it.
Okay. Michael? Okay. So I'm going to give out the letter, and you guys are welcome to read it. We'll take a few minutes to read it, and then we'll start our discussion. Okay, so the issue we're dealing with is dealing with our past and dealing with coming into contact with our past again. Again, I wrote in the beginning of the letter that everything I'm writing and everything I'm saying is really based on my perception. I haven't really experienced it myself, which means you guys have to decide if what I'm saying is valid or not. I'm going to explain what I'm saying. I'm going to explain to you what I think and why I think it. And you guys have to think it through and decide for yourself if I'm right or wrong. I'll be very happy if I get feedback. If you guys disagree with what I'm saying, or you think there are better ways of going about it, or whatever you have to say, I'm interested in hearing. Sach hakol, this is a learning process. The fact that we're dealing with this issue is something new. It's a result of the fact that I got feedback. People came with this question time and again in the last few days. And my response to it is also based upon your feedback, based upon what I see and understand from you. So I'll be very happy if you have feedback and you have things to say. Everyone, let me know. I'm happy to hear it. The letter deals primarily with parents, because I feel that parents is where the things very often come to a head. When a person comes back home, one's parents are one's parents. One might have done giyur, and halachically we don't treat them as parents. One might adopt a totally different lifestyle, and they might be very upset with one. But there is still a connection that exists with one's parents, and irrespective of whether they did bring them up, they didn't bring them up, they were good parents, they were bad parents, there is some connection, as the letter describes, that's there, and we can't help it. And sometimes that can affect us like nothing else can. Of course, everything that's written in the letter can be applied to a sibling, to old friends, to the neighborhood, to the country. It's not limited to parents. I just think that parents have a strength and have a connection with us that no one else does. So I addressed it with regard to parents. Obviously, we're going to have to adapt a little bit with regard to other people, because we don't have the same obligations as we do to our parents. Our parents, we have to respect. Our parents, we have to show a certain amount of honor, and if a person does tshuva just because his parents aren't eating kosher, it doesn't mean that he could deride them. One has an obligation to speak to them and of them in a respectful way. That doesn't mean one has to agree with them, but there are certain obligations that we have to adhere to. If it's someone's old friend who's eating chazir, and he tells him, hey, I know you went to yeshiva, but no one's looking, come eat chazir with me, then maybe the response is, who are you kidding? What's wrong with you? I don't do that. If someone asked you to come go for a feast with him and eat sand, you'd look at him like he was off the moon. What do you mean? Who eats sand? What's wrong? You wouldn't start thinking, well, maybe I have to be polite and maybe something else. You'd think there's something wrong with this person. Well, we strive to reach a point where this is real and this is a part of us. And if it's not our parents, if it's someone else, then sometimes there is a certain reaction which is acceptable and is the way a person is supposed to react. If someone were to come to a person, the person's been religious for the last 10 years, someone comes to him and says, tomorrow night's midnight mass, are you coming? So a person can look at him like, what's wrong with you? A person can respond, a person can choose not to respond. But a person doesn't have to say, well, no, I don't believe in it, you know I don't believe in it. A person doesn't have to start thinking of how to be nice about it. The person knows I've been religious for 10 years. He knows I'm not interested in that. He's obviously coming to spawn an attack. I don't have to fall for that, and I don't have to put up with that. So the reaction is slightly different in that to parents, there's an element of things that we owe them that we don't owe others. And with others, we don't necessarily have to maintain contact altogether. And sometimes that is the correct solution. People sometimes have old friends who keep trying to dissuade them from the path they've chosen. If a person has decided this is the way he's going, he doesn't have to continue the argument. We don't owe that to anyone. Even one's own parents. We always say in Judaism that we're not trying to convert others and we're not trying to enter into philosophical debates. One of the challenges that many people have is that people try to bring them into debates. And with all due respect to everyone that's learning here, I don't feel anyone can be confident that they know enough to answer all the questions. I myself try to avoid conflicts, even though I've read many, many books, and on this topic specifically, and I have books if you're interested, a very good pamphlet if specifically someone is bugging you with Christian claims, there's a very good pamphlet that was put out, You Take Jesus, I'll Take God. It's a very, very nice book that explains very simply why the claims have no foundation. But the truth is, that's not what we spend our time doing. Once a person has chosen the path, so let him grow. And more often than not, these conversations and these arguments detract from both sides. People enter the conversation and they're not really interested in hearing what you have to say. They're interested in you hearing what they have to say. And that's why these discussions, Chazal also told us, a person never knows what will influence him. Chazal themselves, as certain as they were, they themselves said, we will refrain from entering into philosophical arguments. The only time that a real rabbi had an argument protecting Judaism was when he was forced. Every time we were invited to a debate, the rabbis said, we're not interested. We're not coming to convince you. We're not coming to dissuade you. You leave us alone, we'll leave you alone. And it was only when the kings forced our hand and forced us to stand up to these debates that we did. There was almost never a situation where we debated otherwise. Now this was throughout our history, and if this was true of the greatest rabbis of our history, we should definitely not be so confident ourselves that after learning for 3 years or 5 years or 10 years or 20 years or 30 years, we know our stuff so well that we could stand up to a debate and win. Whether we win or not, we're not fit to represent Judaism, and we're not fit to stand up to this debate. And I say we, I include myself. And that's why it hasn't happened in a while, but a few years ago, every so often, guys would ask on a Thursday night in the open session, they'd say, can I ask a few questions about what Judaism does with this claim or that claim that Christianity has or that Islam has or someone else? And my answer always was, if you could find someone else that will answer, you could. If you can't, so we'll talk about it one-on-one. I don't want to do it in front of everyone because one never knows how the conversation is going to go. And just because one can debate better, that doesn't mean that one can win. I feel stuck in this position that sometimes I don't have a choice but to enter the conversation because if someone has a question, so sometimes I feel like it's part of my job to think it through with them. But if not for the fact that that's my job here, I wouldn't do that either. Sometimes I feel like I don't have a choice. So this is talking about the head-on disagreement, which I would strongly recommend to avoid. The problem is, as I wrote in the letter, that very often it's not head-on. Very often what happens is we come home and this is where we grew up. This is the life we used to lead. And when we walk away from it, suddenly that felt familiar, far more familiar than the life we're leading now. And that can leave a person in a state where it shakes his whole system. One of the things that I think will be helpful is this letter. Just the fact that a person is aware of the challenge, I think, already precludes part of the problems of the challenge. The fact that a person knows that this happens to many, many people, so when it starts happening to him, he'll understand what's happening. He'll understand that, yeah, this is how I grew up. So of course this feels natural to me. That doesn't necessarily mean that what I'm doing is wrong. That just means this is what I'm comfortable with. Moshe Rabbeinu asks Hashem, "Hareini nat kvodecha ve'eida acha." Reveal to me your honor. I want to know you. Chazal tell us that Moshe Rabbeinu was asking for a clarity in his faith in God, in his knowledge of God, that would be unwavering. You understand those words? Moshe Rabbeinu speaks to God, gives us the whole Torah, and when he sees the time is fitting, he says, God, do me a favor, reveal yourself to me in a way that my faith will be unwavering, that I'll have clarity, I'll know you just like I know a fellow man, I recognize, I know everything, that it's clear to me beyond any doubt that you're the one running the world, that you're everything that you really are. That means, and God refuses this request, that even Moshe Rabbeinu had points in which he had to strengthen himself, had points in which his belief was not up to the par that he would like it to be. We, of course, don't understand that. What do you mean? He gave us the whole Torah. He spoke to God. God spoke to him. Where's the room for doubt here? But obviously, there are aspects where even Moshe Rabbeinu had to strengthen himself. Now, if that's true of Moshe Rabbeinu, then how much more so is that true of us? People sometimes think, oh, you're a rabbi. What do you have to worry about? It doesn't work that way. Every person, Chazal tell us, we had a high priest who, at the end of his days, he became a Sadducee. He rejected the whole tradition. Years that he was representing the whole Jewish people on Yom Kippur, and he merited to live those years as a representative. And then at the end of his days, he decided, no, I'm going the other way. And that the Gemara tells us that. So that means that no person can feel like, I've made it, I'm strong, I could live up to this. One of the mistakes, I think, that people make when they go into the old territory is that they think they're strong enough for it. They think, this won't affect me. I know what I believe. I know who I am. And Chazal told us that no one is strong enough. No one can be so confident as to say, I'll go off to an area where there are sinners and I'll manage. Because the prophet Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah, who Chazal tell us was akin to Moshe Rabbeinu, Yirmiyahu was, Chazal shows equations. Whatever Moshe did, Yirmiyahu did. He's a prophet, he's talking to God, and yet he says, "Mi'itneini b'midbar melon ochim." If only I could, if God didn't force me to come among these people, these sinners, I wouldn't be here. Now, he had a much better handle on everything in Judaism than we do, and nonetheless he said, if I could, I'd be out of here. I wouldn't be among sinners. I wouldn't be where I am now. I'm sorry, yeah. Which? I think it was Yochanan. Pretty sure it was Yochanan. So I think that a person has to know that entering a situation like that is entering a challenge. And as with every challenge, we pray not to be challenged. We try to avoid challenges. And we never know whether we'll live up to it. Every morning we say, Al tivienu, please God, don't bring us loli de nisayon, don't bring us to a situation of a test. Why not? Because who knows if we'll live up to it. One person asked God for a test, David HaMelech, and he failed. He said, God, I regret asking for the test. I asked for a test and I messed up. Please forgive me that I asked for the test. So we ask every day not to be tested. We have to be aware that coming back to the old environment is a test. There was once a guy who came to Machon Meir. Some of you guys might remember him. I don't want to say his name. He showed up and he wasn't keeping Shabbos and he wasn't keeping kosher. He wasn't keeping, I don't know of any mitzvah he was keeping. So when he showed up, he said, I'm coming for the night. So fine. The Jew wants to come learn. He showed up when my class was starting. He learned. He said, I'm staying over the night. And he wished me goodbye at the end of class. The next morning, he's still here. And after a week, he was still here. And suddenly he learned what it means to keep Shabbos. He said, wow, never heard of this. Interesting. I grew up in a Reform community. Everyone drove on Shabbos. This is a new experience. I experienced Shabbos here. Wow. Another week passes. And every week he's learning more and more. He had a ticket to go back home. And every time he's delaying it. He says, no, I need another month, Ma. I'll be back in a month. Delays his ticket by a month. Okay. So he's learning here 2 months. And his parents and siblings start calling us here at Machon Meir. What's with this guy? How come he's not coming? How come he's not sending pictures? Is he still normal? So I made him stand and we took a picture of him and we emailed it back to show him he was still normal. Okay. He learned here, I don't know how many months. Like every 2 weeks he'd have to delay his flight again. And then he came in. What?
From where?
He was from Chutz Aretz. I don't want to say which country. You'll hear at the end of the story why I don't want to say more details. And after a long time that he was studying here, and he was keeping kosher, and he was keeping Shabbos, he started feeling pressure. He's got to go back. He has his apartment there, he has his job, he's in the middle of his studies. And he comes into the office and he says, you know, I have to go back, but I know the minute I get off that plane, I know the minute I go back, everything goes bye-bye. And I know I'll be strong, I'll last a week, I'll last a month, but it's not going to last too long. It's not going to last. So we tried thinking with him how he could avoid going back, how we could make things work here. And to make a long story short, after postponing the trip for a long time, he did get on that plane and went back. So the first Shabbos he's back, he emails me and he says, it's amazing, I showed my parents what Shabbos is all about. I taught my parents how to light candles. My mother says that she always loved it. It's because my father, she stopped doing it. My father came with me. I took him to shul. And a week later, he emails me another email. He says, well, it's getting difficult. I don't know. I'm back away from my parents. I'm by the studies. I'm living where there isn't really a Jewish community. All my old friends are calling me. What do you suggest we do? So I emailed him back. I set him up for Shabbos meals, set him up with families, tried setting him up with new friends. To make a long story short, today he doesn't wear a yarmulke. He doesn't keep kosher. He doesn't keep Shabbos. I don't know if he keeps anything. And he said before he went back, he said that that's what would happen. He said, all my friends are going to call me. They're still my friends. I like them. Or I used to go to the bar every night. I'd finish work, I'd go to the bar. All those bars are still waiting for me. All the girls in the bars are still waiting for me. I'm getting emails all the time. Why don't you come back? And I know that I said, get off the plane. I'm going to a life that's much worse than the life here. I'm never going to have the quality of life that I can have here. He said it. He was sitting here and saying it. But I know that I'm not going to live up to it. He was smart enough, but it was too hard. I don't blame him. It's not my job to judge him. God forbid. It's between him and his creator. But unfortunately, I know... we're in touch, and I get emails that he sends on Shabbos, and I get mass emails. Sometimes he doesn't realize I'm on his list, and I'll see pictures of him in bars without a yarmulke and all kinds of places, and every time I see it, I have to shed a tear. There's a guy who was here, saw where he came from, saw his potential, said, I don't want to go back to that, and I know that when I go, I'm not going to live up to that. And he fulfilled his prophecy. Today, I don't know if we'd invite him to Machon Meir if he'd even look at us. I don't know. He's a nice person. I mean, he'd look at us. He'd say, hello, hi, how are you? Yeah, I'm not interested. It's difficult. I don't think anyone can stand up and say, I could go back and I'll be fine. I could stand up to everything. And there's a very, very big misconception here at Machon Meir. Guys enter Machon Meir and they shoot up. It's amazing to see how guys take off when they come to Machon Meir. You guys look around, look at yourselves. A guy that comes to Machon Meir and doesn't know he's not allowed to shave with a razor. So the next day he finds out, hey, you're not allowed to shave with a razor, it's prohibited in the Torah. Okay, keeps that biblical prohibition. Next day he finds out you're supposed to wear tzitzis, keeping a mitzvah of tzitzis. Finds out how you're supposed to pray, starts praying. Finds out you're supposed to wear tefillin. Look at this guy. The beginning of the week he was transgressing and he didn't even know it. By the end of the week, he's not transgressing, he's maintaining mitzvot, suddenly he's wearing a kippah, he's making blessings. People grow exponentially, and they grow very, very fast. And people feel like, wow, this is me, I'll just keep growing. I'll leave the machon and I'll keep growing. So we've often discussed that you can't keep growing if you don't keep learning. It's very difficult, and I would say impossible, to keep growing if you don't keep learning. But it's also a question of what environment does one go to. And even though I'm discussing going back with permanence to that environment, we have to know that even the visits have an impact on all of us. No, and I don't think any person can say it has no impact on him. So I have a friend who tells me, every time I go back, I come back more disgusted. I say, never again am I going back. I'm never going to see them again. But even he, in our discussions once, he said, but the truth is, I can't say it didn't pull me down. Chazal told us, you walk through a tannery where they tan hide, so it stinks. You're going to walk out stinking. There's nothing you can do. You didn't touch anything. You just walk through. You walk out stinking. You walk through a perfume shop, you'll end up smelling good. You walk out. Some of the perfumes clung to your clothes. Wherever we go, it affects us. And when we go to a place that we feel a part of that place, then the potency of that effect is unknown till we leave. We don't know where we're going or what the effect's going to be. Yes, sir.
Well, Father, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm a little off base here, but let's say, why could he was right? He fell off the derech that he didn't want to because he left. But let's say you go home and you still have the principle. Let's say you don't go out on Shabbos. Say you see them Saturday night, not Friday night. Let's say go out within the week. They want to eat kosher. That's not fine. Just don't eat with them. Why can't you have both?
Theoretically, it's very tempting to do both. Theoretically, a person might think if you have the will, you could do it. Chazal instituted certain institutions. Chazal told us that a Jew is not supposed to sit down for a drink of wine with a non-Jew. Why not? Because if you're going to be so friendly with him that you're drinking wine together with him, then before you know it, you'll invite him over to your house. Your daughter will meet his son. His daughter will meet your son. Before you know it, there'll be intermarriage here. Chazal said, you can't go to that New Year's Eve party where everyone's drinking. You can't. But your boss invites you. Yeah, but it's a party that shows friendship. Many deals. New York is filled with bars. There are exclusive bars that don't look like the bars that you see on Cheers. There are bars where business people come and they sit down for a drink after work, and many of the business deals get done there. Many of the promotions get done there. But people are more at ease. They're not at work. They sit down and they order their wine, their beer, whatever it is, and they talk. Now, a religious person working in a non-religious environment has a problem, because that's exactly what Chazal said we're not supposed to do. So I'm not coming again. I'm not discussing the halachic aspect. Saying halachically, each one will talk to his rabbi. We'll find out if there's a way to be lenient. We'll find out what to do. I'm not dealing with halacha now. Nothing I'm saying here has anything to do with halacha. We're mentioning halachic concepts. But my goal isn't to discuss halacha tonight. Don't infer anything in halacha from what we're saying. My goal is simply to discuss the concepts. What Chazal taught us is that no person, that means me, you, anyone else, no person can be confident that once a relationship evolves, where it's going to end. I'm friendly with him, what's going to be with my daughter? What's going to be with my son? I can say I can be as confident as I want, but I have no idea where it's going to end up. Chazal said, you're not even allowed to accept a cake from him. You're not allowed to accept the baked goods, but he made it with kosher ingredients. He's telling you, it's all kosher. I went to the kosher bakery, I stood there and I took their ingredients and I mixed it and I did everything. I went to my daughter-in-law who's a Jew. My son married, I married a Jewish girl, right? And the guy says, I'm not Jewish, but I have a Jewish daughter-in-law. I went to her kitchen, she gave me all the ingredients. I went to my rabbi, I did it in his kitchen, doesn't matter. If he personally baked the cake for you, now Halacha says that's already a level of friendship, so you don't know where it's going to get to. So it's complicated. And I want to add something. We once had a class on the laws of Yichud. Give me just 1 second. We once had a class on the laws of Yichud. And I didn't want to have this class, but guys here kept pushing for the class. So when I started the class, after many introductions, I said, look, we're going to learn the halacha, bottom line, what we're responsible to do. But at the same time that the halacha tells us what to do, the halacha also tells us that a person is a work in process. A person can't wake up one morning and suddenly say, I'm keeping the whole Torah and remain sane. It doesn't work. A person has to grow. And so I don't want to come here with instructions. This is what you must do in order for it to work. That's not my goal here. My goal here is to present the issues, present the problems, so that we should be aware of them, and then work with someone personally, or work it out yourself if you feel confident, how you're going to contend with these issues. But my goal, I'm not coming here and saying, okay, so every person, that's it. Email all your people who are friends who are not Jewish or don't keep Torah mitzvahs. Tell them, guys, that's it. It's over. Me and you, go find someone else. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the issue is a real one. The problem is a potent one. We have to be aware of it and then work out how we're going to deal with it. But we shouldn't kid ourselves into thinking, I'm just going for a visit. I'm going to be by my parents for the weekend and everything will be okay. I'll come back to the same person that walked in. Chances are not. It's a difficult situation, and it doesn't have to be parents. It could be old friends. I don't have the right to tell you people's personal stories. But I could tell you that this is a repeating story at Machon Meir Barsham. I would say that most people, that's not what happens. But unfortunately, there are those who come here and leave, and they don't continue where they were growing. They're growing in one direction, and when they go back to their old friends and everyone they knew, they're growing in a different direction. I don't know if I can use the word growing. They're going in a different direction. Again, my goal tonight is to point out the issues. People should be aware of them. When they happen, people shouldn't kid themselves. They do happen. And before entering the situation, a person has to think, how am I going to strengthen myself? And what can and can't I do? And sometimes the solution is going to be, as hard as it is, I can't be friends with that person. I have a friend who used to argue with me philosophically for years. And so long as he was religious and there was a point to our discussion, fine. One day he walked in and notified me, that's it, he's leaving everything. And I felt a tremendous change, and I felt I can't handle the arguments with him anymore. It's not that his decision made it. He decided he's a different person, and then the conversations took on a different tone. I decided I can't help him. Someone else will have to help him. If he needs a loan, if he needs a place to stay, it's one thing. If he needs a conversation with me about philosophical issues, I can't be there for him. I'm not fit for it. And I think every person has to think sometimes we have to give up, and it's not easy. But we have to realize we can't kid ourselves. We have to be truthful. The Japanese have a saying. There are three weapons in this world. The sword, the jewel, and the mirror. The sword represents power. Different armies, militaries. The jewel represents money, wealth. And the mirror, they say, is the most potent. That represents know thyself. A person can do all the other ones and be successful in them and avoid the mirror. I'm coming here tonight to think about the mirror. Who we are, recognize our weaknesses, recognize what we have to contend with, and recognize that sometimes we're going to have to make painful decisions, and we don't have a choice. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Just remind me your name.
Evan.
Okay.
Sorry, I came a little bit late, but I just wanted to ask about the situation you were talking about earlier. You mentioned what it sounded like a person going to the daughter-in-law, and also another person going to a rabbi's kitchen to do the cooking. I'm sorry, just tell me the situations.
I was just trying to make up a situation where a non-Jew offers a cake that he made personally, and we don't have to worry about the kashrus. I was just trying to think of a situation where a non-Jew can come to a Jew and say, I have a cake for you, and it's for sure kosher, but I baked it myself. So there are such situations brought in halacha that are not applicable today, so I didn't quote them from halacha. I made up a different case just so that it fits the halacha we were discussing.
So are we talking about a Jew who is stam Jewish from birth, or a Jew who has converted in
Islam? So our discussion tonight is both to converts and to people who are chozer b'tshuva. There are aspects that apply to converts which I would only discuss with a person on a personal basis because they involve a person's growth. And I don't think that one can give a class and speak to each person individually at the same time. So instead, I'm not dealing with a convert, with a ger. I think all these points apply to a ger. I think a ger is going to have to think how to apply them. But there are more points that would apply to a ger, which I can't do on a public forum, and I wouldn't do it unless I knew the person, and we could have a long conversation thinking through how we would do things. And these are conversations which I have on a regular basis with guys. Even after they've left the machon, we think through how to deal with certain issues. A guy did gear, he has three children, and his parents suddenly come, and his parents all wear crosses, and he doesn't want his kids to see their grandparents that way. He doesn't view them as grandparents, he doesn't tell his children they're their grandparents, but now what's he going to do when his parents suddenly fly in, and they're all wearing crosses, and they're not going to change. So now what does he do? So these are issues which are very individual, and they deserve individual thought. That's why in this form I'm not dealing with it. But I think the other issues are issues that pertain to everyone, be it a person did tshuva or did gear. Well, yeah.
Like you said before, that being friends with goyim lead to more assimilation. But let's say you raise your children usually, and you tell them it's forbidden, and if she ends up putting off with a goy, it's not your fault. It's maybe it is your fault, but you didn't. You raised her, and if you raised her the right way, not to understand that marrying a goy is wrong, and you're not allowed to do it, then she won't do it.
I think Chazal knew human nature better. One thing leads to another. Friendships don't just remain friendships, and the nature of the human being is that things evolve, and we don't have control over where they evolve and where our emotions go, and it's a very difficult thing to expect a person to have the strength to stand up to the test. So even though that is our responsibility, we try to avoid the situation. And you're right. If a person's in that situation, they still have a responsibility not to marry a non-Jew. A Jew is responsible to marry a Jew. But at the same time, it's still a difficult situation. And no one knows whether they'll live up to any test till they've been through it. So in order to avoid that difficult, difficult test, Chazal instructed us to take precautionary measures, as is true with every situation. Chazal forbade yichud. You can't be alone with a woman in the room. So you might say, well, I know I'm not allowed to do anything. Right, but Chazal knew our nature, and they knew that if the first time nothing's going to happen, you don't know what will happen the 100th time. If it didn't happen when a person was happy with his marriage at home, who knows what will happen when he walks into the office late that night and he's very upset with his wife. You don't know. So Chazal told us, stay away from the challenge. Chazal always instructed us to stay away from the cliff. Not to say, well, I'll break and I'll make it. Did someone else want something? Okay. The next point that was raised is where there are points of contention with one's parents, specifically about getting married. I think that the specific case has to be discussed individually. But I think the general question, let's say parents say, don't be such a fanatic. Why you have to walk around with your tzitzis out? No one here walks around with their tzitzis out. Okay? We could take another case. Parents say, don't be such a fanatic. You went to sleep last night. You don't have to get up on time to say Kriya Shema to daven. Sleep a little late. You're going to get sick. You'll notice that these words, don't be such a fanatic, can be applied to anything. It's just a question of who's talking.
It's so famous. Familiar for me from Ukraine. At every step, I was encountered with you.
Yeah, so there's a saying that says, you want to know what's normal, you want to know what the middle ground is, just listen to the person talking. People always feel like they're on the middle ground. Every person talking feels like he's not a fanatic. You speak to the president of Iran, he's not a fanatic. No, God forbid, he's very normal. Every person you talk to is going to say they're on the middle ground. We have to take care not to let that influence us. At the same time, we have to know to choose our battles. There is a halachic opinion that says that tzitzis could be inside your pants. There's no reason to argue with our parents on something that is unnecessary. What things yes and what things no. So that's why a person should try and speak to a Rebbe before he enters a situation or before he expresses an opinion. There was once a couple that one side wanted mixed seating, and the other side made World War III about not having mixed seating. So it reached a point where the shidduch was about to break over there. Until they said, why don't you talk to your rabbi? Well, which side was supposed to talk to their rabbi? You know, it's always like, you talk. I don't want to go into what the rabbi said because I don't think it's so relevant. But you'd be surprised what's permissible in halacha. I don't think a person should make World War III over issues that don't deserve World War III. By the same token, a person doesn't have to change everything he does just for his parents. So there's a balance, and that balance every person has to know, but you also have to know your ignorance. All too often guys come, and I hear they made World War III with their sister or their parent over something that they had no legitimacy to fight about. If it bothered the other person, then they were wrong. A person says, I want to wake up Vasikin. I'm going to wake up early, the alarm clock will wake up the whole house. But I always wake up Vasikin. But your parents say it's waking them up. Who said you're entitled to do that when it's going to wake someone else up? Who said? A person says, there are many times that people say many things and they want to stick to their guns and they go to the wrong extreme. So I think it's important for a person to have constant contact. I've done that with guys. There were guys who went back home and each day, we were in touch for a few minutes, and they posed halachic questions. My father's pressuring me, I have to go to exercise, I have to go mixed swimming. Okay, maybe you could find a pool that doesn't have mixed swimming. You'll make your father happy, you'll do the exercise, and you'll maintain the halacha. Oh, I didn't think of that. Okay, he did find. Took another 10 minutes to travel there. He took his father there. Now his father goes swimming, and it's not mixed swimming. He taught his father another venue. My parents say that I have to exercise a certain number of hours a day. It's not healthy for me to learn all day. Okay, how long are you by them? Another 2 days? Does it bother you if you take, during those 2 days, you have to spend some time with your parents? Go with your father for a walk. Go with him for a jog. He'll make him happy. He'll have spent time. You'll have done kibbut aveim for 2 days. What do you have to fight over that? But I learn, but I have my seder. It's true, but you're going to spend time with your parents. Let's find a compromise. Who said you're right? You do take time to do other things. So take the time in a way that will make them happy. There are issues which are non-issues, and it's not right to make issues of them. By the same token, there are issues that are very much issues. And those issues, a person has to consult with his Rebbe to think together where a person's holding. even though the halacha might say black on white, this is forbidden, but sometimes a person's not up to that. And if you're going to tell him, well, that's the halacha, you don't have a choice, so then you might end up losing the whole battle. I had a friend, not in this yeshiva, who had just become religious. And he went to someone who hadn't learned enough, but knew enough to tell him what the dry halacha said. And that person told him, come Pesach, you're not allowed to eat a thing in your parents' house. You have to have your own pots, you have to purchase your own pots. You have to make your own food, you have to get your own plates, you have to eat your own on your own silverware. Now, dry halacha was 100% right. This guy's parents didn't, I don't know if they kept kosher, they for sure didn't keep Pesach. They sat for the Seder with bread, they had pitas. I mean, not pitas that were matzah, they had chametz. So he was right, technically. But I tried dissuading the guy. I told him, wait a second, you're new to all this. You don't know all these halachos. I'm not sure you're holding where you can really keep all these halachos. And the guy was adamant, no, if this is the halacha, this is what I'm going to do. To make a long story short, it's been 7 years now. He's still eating Pesach by his parents. So that year he fought, but he wasn't ready for that fight. Someone gave him advice who wasn't fit to give advice, someone who didn't have experience, someone who had just learned, there's the halacha. So he came and told him, that's the halacha. We also have to take into account, are we going to be able to live with this long term? As we discussed earlier, we have to build things. We build things, it's a gradual process. The halacha says when a person becomes a ger, you don't tell him at the first second, okay, now all the halachas, here are all the halachas, now you have to change your whole life. We tell them you should know. There are many halachos. It is a different life. There are many details. You're not going to be able to do everything you'd like to do. You're going to have to obey every doraisa, every drabonon. And with time, you'll learn it. We don't smash it down on a person in 1 second. We say, yeah, you'll learn it slowly. When a child becomes bar mitzvah, does he know everything? No. He knows what he's seen at home. And he'll evolve. He'll learn. By the same token, every person has to grow. We're growing throughout our lives. It's important to think with someone who could work with you at your pace, to work with you at your growth level. And that's why, even though we're discussing the problems with going home, one of the problems is also knowing what to fight about. We don't have to create issues. Sometimes there are things we shouldn't fight about. I'm with you.
Exactly in the situations you're describing, every time they go home to their mom, and what I found out is working very well is just explaining her before I come. Listen, you remember last year I was doing that and that and that. When I come this year, I learned that and that and that. So last year, when I did, 2 years before when I was there, I was eating from her dishes and was using her silverware. This year when I came, I said, like, listen, mom, I'm going to bring my glasses and dishes and I bring my own silverware. Don't be offended. But it's because of this and this reason. And this time I wasn't aware of, now I'm aware of, now I keep it. So there's changed something.
Right.
That she can follow.
So that's a great point. I want to mention 2 points. I'll get to you in 1 second.
I was actually just going to add that.
Yeah?
Similarly with my family, when I left from the United States to make Aliyah, I told them, you know, I've kept a semblance of halacha here, but I haven't gone all the way for Shalom Bayit. I didn't obviously call it that. And explained, you know, things will be different and there are things that will have to change because I really do want to keep these laws, but I didn't want to make it hard for you guys. And I gave them warning ahead of time. I'm going to remind them again when we come back what specifically this will involve, not just saying a general things change. And as best I can tell, it's been really good also just to sort of be upfront about stuff like this. But conversely, also being upfront about stuff that I have problems with, even in Jewish law, with them, so that they feel also part of my life. And because these things are big parts of my life right now, is learning the halachot and what they involve for me on a day-to-day basis.
So I think that's a great point, that speaking in advance and explaining can very often be very helpful, so long as it can remain on the level of respect it. You don't have to understand it. Just respect it. I think it's also important, the point you mentioned in passing, that we be honest about what we don't know. Very often we come back, you've been learning 3 years. you don't know this? And the answer is no. I mean, it's very uncomfortable. I've said this in the past, that we have a question-answer session Thursday night. Guys ask questions, and sometimes I say, I don't know. It's not comfortable. I'm sitting here. I'm supposed to know. Well, I don't. What can I do? And the same thing holds true when you guys come home. You're doing yourself a disservice if you're going to make like you know everything. It's much better to say the truth. I'm starting out. I'm learning. I can only tell you this is what I've learned thus far. And sometimes we say, you know, now it's different. I was this past Shabbos. I was at a table where someone quoted to me something I said 3 weeks ago. So I said, I don't remember if I said it that way, but if that's what I said, I could think of quite a few proofs to the contrary, halachically. I don't know why I said that, if that's what I said. My wife, who was there both times, said she thinks they were misquoting me, but I said, if that's what I said, if you understood incorrectly, I really don't know why I said that. I remember the conversation. I remember saying something to that effect. I remember having a source for what I was saying. I can't remember what it was now, and I don't remember exactly what I said, but if I said it the way you said it, then I was wrong. I don't think I was right. So sometimes it's good to say, hey, I'm wrong, or I was wrong, or I'm learning. And forewarning helps. That's something which sometimes, like if I have to come to a meeting with a woman, so I make known in advance, if only I could, the laws, I'll only meet with you where my wife is present. Yeah, the halacha says you can meet with the door open. I won't do it. My policy, I'm not willing to do it. If it's in my home, then it's not enough that the door could be open, the door has to be open. If you're uncomfortable, then go to someone else. I won't do it. I won't shake your hand, you know, that. And then I explain. I once came to an office, and the secretary extended her hand. Now her boss was a Jew, and he shook her hand. So her boss introduces me as the rabbi. Now what am I supposed to say? Like, he does shake her hand, and I'm going to say no. So I said, look, I'm coming from Israel, and the laws that we follow, I made it like very enigmatic. The laws that we follow, she could understand it in Israel, she could understand it as rabbis, she could understand it as Jews, is that we don't touch any woman other than our wives. We view it as sacred. We view it as any physical contact with a woman we view as sacred. And we view it as something that's infringing on the husband and wife. It's something that's just a person with his mother, with his daughter, with his sister, yes, but anything beyond that, no. And I had now. I was at a wedding when I was in the States now, and an old woman came to the chassan and said, I'm not letting you go till you kiss me. So I was there, and that old woman happened to be, and I saw the chassan, he's wearing his black hat, his kala standing there, the whole family's there, and he doesn't know what to do with himself. So I walked over, and she was a relative of mine, so I said, look, I feel very sad that I'm interfering, but I have to tell you, we're going to have to ask one of the grandsons that he should give you a kiss in his place, or the kala will kiss you in his place. The chassan didn't know what to do with himself. He was standing there like her, and the kala is standing there, and she doesn't know what to do. So I said, look, we can ask the kala to kiss on his behalf, or we could ask one of your grandsons to kiss on his behalf. He can't do it because halachically, a person may only kiss their mother, grandmother, daughter, sister, wife. She said, really? Said, yeah, that's not halacha, I'm sorry. And the chassan thanked me like after she left. He was okay. So I explained it to her, and I asked the kala to give her two kisses on behalf of herself and the chassan, and she walked away with a smile. Sometimes you have to think how to get out of it, and to try and do it without offending someone. And one of the things I do is make it known in advance, like you guys are saying. It's a big help. Yeah.
And even if it can be even nicer, for example, last time when I was visiting my mom, I was in support. It was a little more problematic because of my email and so on and so forth. There was explaining my mom, so on and so forth. I have to do the Sukkah. What is the Sukkah? And I explained what the Sukkah stands for and what I need for it and so on and so forth. And she said, like, oh, that's going to be fun. And I said, yeah. I'm not sure if you need to take a look at it. So the bigger problem was that on the airport checking in Tel Aviv airport area, I realized that I forgot my lulav.
I had my Itzchok in my head, like it's Baruch Hashem, but I forgot my Buddha, my Ma'arasim, and my Arabot, I forgot, yeah, my Zomun. So I explained to my mom, I need a real palm tree, I need Arasim, and I need Arabot. Like, do you know where I can find that? And she's like, yeah, I'm late. And then we were driving, like, and it was like one day before the chag, until tomorrow morning, I need all the chag, I need it. And it's like, there's no other thing. Tomorrow morning, you shag it, I have to shake this love. I need this love. And we were driving, like, for hours all across the island to find this, to find the spices, to growing somewhere. But Baruch Hashem, we found everything.
So that's a yafet. Baruch Hashem. I think.
I'm sure my mom knows now exactly how to celebrate Sukkot.
So I want to add a point to what you're saying. Sometimes we our fear causes problems. We'll interpret what we're hearing based upon our fears. We project our fears onto others. So that's a good point. If you approach things positively, sometimes they work well. But we also have to know that sometimes they don't. And all the things we discussed in the beginning are still relevant. There's still the danger of I'm entering a system I'm accustomed to, familiar with, feel comfortable with. This is the life I led until a certain point, and it feels far more natural to me sometimes than the life I'm leading now. And sometimes people come back to the machon after a visit at home, and they're never the same. People can sometimes come back after a visit home and they say, oh, it was great. And you see their smile is gone. And that's what I was describing here in the letter. That suddenly things can be much, much, much more difficult. And it's really more difficult. And a person has to recognize, I'm hoping that one of the effects of this letter is that we won't have this letter happening to us. We'll be aware, wait a second, what's happening here? This is why I feel comfortable at home. Sure, I feel comfortable. I'm used to eating this salad with bacon. That's what I'm used to. So now I don't. And there's a certain pride which it's difficult to develop and to develop correctly. There was once a Hasidish family that moved to South Bend, Indiana.
Where?
South Bend, Indiana. Community that doesn't have that many religious Jews. So they come to the public school. They didn't have a Jewish school there. And the girls are wearing pigtails, and the boys are with forelocks, long pants. So you'd think that they'd come home after 2 days and say, Mom, Dad, it's uncomfortable. Everyone there is different than us. By the end of the week, every child was coming home to their parent and saying, I want braids like that. I want forelocks like that. They walked into class with such confidence. What I'm doing is right. I have nothing to be ashamed of. You guys, I don't know what you're doing, but I'm doing what's right. They did it in a nice way, but they had a certain self-worth. They recognized, hey, I have nothing to be ashamed of. This is what's right. I think it takes a long time for a person to develop that. If we're brought up this way, so we may have it. But if this is new to us, we shouldn't kid ourselves. When people are going to say things, it's difficult. And we don't necessarily have that confidence. We'd like to have it, but that doesn't mean we have it. And that's one of the reasons why when we come back, so life can be much, much, much more difficult. There's a guy who was living here in Israel, very simple life, and he went to the United States for a visit. When he's there, everyone he meets has a car. People are, they don't make their own coffee at home in the morning. They're going to Dunkin' Donuts to buy their coffee. He suddenly sees a totally different lifestyle. He thinks about spending 2 shekel, and they don't think about spending $20. So he's there for a day, he's there for a week, and his family's talking to him about, just be careful, his family's talking to him about, you know, maybe you should come here, make a little bit more money, you'll be able to go back. They're not trying to affect him religiously, but they're talking to him. They're telling him, look, what do you need? We'll get you. You need socks, we'll get you socks. What's the big deal? It's $10. What's $10? We'll get you a pack of 20 socks. And things that he couldn't even think of affording, they're talking about like it's no big deal. And he had been toying with the thought of purchasing an old used car. So when he's there, he calls up his wife and he says, you know, I've thought it over. We really should get a car. It's a different life if you have a car, you don't have a car. And he had a very, very smart wife. She was able to see beyond everything he was saying. And she said, I hear what you're saying about a car. I'm willing to discuss it after you're back in Israel for a month. After you're here for a month, we'll talk it over. Let's not make any decisions now. So he came back, and after 2 or 3 weeks, he suddenly realized, hey, she's right, we can't really afford this car. I lived in a different place, but I'm not there. There was once a merchant who used to go to the fair with the great merchants, and he was a simple merchant. He used to buy simple pieces of material and bring it back and sell them and make a small profit. When you went to the fair, so you had these big shops, they had the standard items, and then you had these little hovels, and in the hovels you'd sometimes be able to find something that was much more precious than anything else, but you had to really know what you were doing. So every time they'd be on the ship on the way back, so the merchants would talk among themselves and discuss what great metzia they found, what great thing they found for such a cheap price. And this guy always had nothing to show and nothing to tell because he wasn't such a great merchant. And one time he decides, I'm going to be like the great merchants. I'm going to do it. And he comes to the fair, he starts going into the hovels and he starts looking. Now the big merchants, they knew how to tell in a second what the cloth was. He's looking and looking and looking and looking, and he has his money and he doesn't know what to buy, and he's looking and looking. The clock's ticking, and it comes time that the fair is going to close. They suddenly announce, half hour to closing. He knows he has to be on that ship back. So he quickly closes some deals, this cloth, that cloth, the other cloth. He comes back on the ship, and all the merchants are showing off. I got this for this price, that for that price. And he looks into his bag, and he sees he doesn't even have the basic cloths that he needs for his business. And what he bought wasn't good quality, and it wasn't a good price. And the big merchants look at him and they say, ah, you thought you were like us. So you went to all these shops and you ended up losing because you didn't get what we get and you didn't get the basic stuff that you should have gotten. You lost on both fronts. Now you're coming home and you can't even sell the stuff you have. Now this mashal was brought by the Chai Adam in the introduction to his work, and he discusses in learning that people sometimes try to shoot too high. They're not ready to learn certain things and they'll rack their brains to learn it, and they're not ready for it, and they end up coming back like this guy who comes with the big merchants. He wants to be like everyone else that's learning this big stuff, and he's not fit for it. And then he comes back and he doesn't have anything. At the end of his learning, he doesn't even have what he would have had if he would have learned simple things that he should have learned. But the same thing is true. We can apply this to many aspects. We have to know where we're holding. Sometimes when we try to shoot too high, I'll convince them, I'll tell them, I'll show them, I'll explain to them. Even though everything you said, I agree with, that sometimes, very often, by explaining we get ahead. But we also have to know where we are. Sometimes if we're going to try to shoot too high, we're not going to get anywhere. We're going to walk back confused. I want to deal with what someone brought up about drinking with the workplace, and as far as maintaining cordial relations. On the one hand, we're not looking to distance anyone. There's no reason. We want everyone to feel good with us. On the other hand, we have to know that there are going to be times when we don't have a choice. You just can't win in all situations. We have to try and figure out, before we enter the situation, forewarned is forearmed. If you know in advance what you're going to contend with, you could do much better. If a person knows that he's going to come to a workplace and they're going to offer him a cup of tea, so then he could try to first have a styrofoam cup that he could get the tea in. He could find out halachically whether he's allowed to take tea or coffee. Coffee in many places in the world, plain coffee doesn't need a hechsher. You go to a non-kosher restaurant in many places and just get a normal cup of coffee. I didn't say that, you did.
My father,
I don't want to go there because when
my father goes into places like Dunkin' Donuts and just gets a coffee.
Okay. So places in the United States, what I was told on last check is that it's true. You could go into a place like Dunkin' Donuts that doesn't have a hechsher, and if it's a simple cup of coffee, that's what I was told. You have to verify if that's current. 5 years ago, that's what I was told when I verified it. Before you do this, practically call up the OU, contact someone who's in the United States and find out. I'm just saying, you know you're going to have certain issues. You know you're going to come to your company or your old boss and he's going to want to go out with you to a drink. So maybe find out what other kosher restaurants around town. A person has to have foresight. Try to think in advance and that'll help you to avoid the problems. If you didn't avoid the problems, then try as best as you can to make things amenable. Just like that secretary that asked me, oh, you guys don't shake non-Jewish women's hands? And I said, no, it has nothing to do with being Jewish or not Jewish. I wouldn't shake a Jewish woman's hand either. I don't. We don't shake any woman's hand. There's nothing to do with it other than my wife, etc., like I told you earlier. So again, there's no, I don't know of any uniform way out, but each situation, the more we could think about it in advance, the better we could do it and think about it. All too often we're lazy. All we think about is, oh no, how's this going to work? Oh no, how's this going to work? We spend our time worrying, but not thinking about real solutions. Talk to someone who has experience. The question was raised as far as people feeling prejudged by who we are. If up until now me and all my friends had afros, and I come in and I've shaved my head, so my friends feel, hey, what's up? Come on, what's wrong with you? We're all the afros, right? It's a problem. It's a real problem. Sometimes people just look at us and see us with the yarmulke, and they feel like, you used to be with us without a yarmulke. Now you've done the yarmulke, so we're all not good enough for you. And in these situations, I like to suggest doing what I did with that guy. Communicate before you show up. Show that you're still connected. A person has siblings that don't keep Torah and mitzvot. They all grew up together. They're still not religious. He's chosen to become religious. So it helps to convey and express that we're still brothers, we're still together, and express it in advance. What I used to do, if I'd go to a wedding, there were people who felt very distant from me because I had a black hat. So when I'd come as a joke, when the scene was right, when the setting was right, I'd put my hat on him. I'd say, oh, I'm a rabbi because I have a hat. So you wear the rabbi, now you wear the hat, now you're the rabbi. There are ways in which we can joke and we can lighten up the atmosphere. And we have to recognize their fear. We have to recognize that the other side is fearful. They feel like they're being judged. So we have to think how to allay those fears. The problem is that more often we respond with fear as well. They feel rejected, I feel rejected. What do you mean? And that's what, we have to stop that cycle. We have to say, wait a second. Let me show them I accept them. We had a story now. A guy calls me up. And he says, there's me, my sister, and my brother. We all got married. We've all been trying to put together savings to buy a house. We're all hopefully almost there. And now my brother stepped forward and he turned to all the grandparents for loans and he wants to buy a house. And I feel like I should be happy for him. And instead, I just feel jealous. How come he's moving forward? What do I do with the fact that I feel jealous? This guy's my brother. I should want what's best for him. And instead, all I can think of is, oh no, he's doing it and I'm not. I'm not holding it. So I told him, this was a conversation yesterday, I said, you know, why don't you try offering your brother a loan? Your brother is going to have to buy a house, right? He's taking out a mortgage. It's going to cost him X amount of money. Every penny he takes out from the bank, he's going to have to pay interest on it. If you have a certain amount of money that you have set aside that you're not going to use for your home, you have money that's that you're not using that you could lend him, so lend him even $5,000. It's not $5,000. It's $5,000 plus the interest on $5,000. And the mere fact that you start thinking positively about him is going to help you to not be jealous of him. What would you expect of yourself? You'd expect of yourself, if my brother's buying a house, I should be happy for him. Should be willing to help him and think what's good for him. Instead, I'm thinking, he's doing it and I'm not. So how do we work on ourselves? We go the opposite direction. So try being positive. And the same holds true over here. If we're going to come to a situation where our family is going to feel like, oh, there, he's the frumi, he's the one with the yarmulke, he's the one with the tzitzis, so let's think how we could be positive towards them. Let's think how we could show up with a gift that they like or something. Again, we have to be careful. We don't have to compromise on what we believe. But we can show the fact that we're positive towards the other side without compromising on what we believe. There are going to be areas that can satisfy both. Are there any other points that guys want to deal with tonight? Again, we're only dealing with one small aspect. The aspect of coming back in contact with our parents or the area where we grew up. Those of you who don't have the letter are welcome. I have extra copies. And I'll just sum up what we discussed tonight. We discussed the challenges. Yeah?
For my sake alone, because I mean, there's
not really anyone else Jewish within 50 miles of them, let alone, you know. So,
she can cook for you, there's no doubt.
Well, because I live in Brooklyn.
There's ways, but like even that, explaining that I have to come turn on the oven or the stove is potentially troublesome. And I've been told to be tactful about this, and I can't imagine a way to actually be tactful, saying, Mom, you know, you've made all this effort for my sake to learn Kashrut for Thanksgiving. You had special dishes, you got some new stuff, and it's now set aside only for times when I come home. And you got these aluminum pans, and you did this, and you did that, and we put some of the stuff at my place, so we bring it here. And I'm having a hard time imagining a way to make that tactful.
So, again, I'm going to try. But like I said at the very beginning, everything I'm saying to a large extent is theory. Mm-hmm. You have to think if it's correct in general and if it's correct to your situation. And I think there are many different ways, and the correct way for you, something you'll have to decide on. Yeah?
May I try to answer this question? Because
by all means.
I have the same discussion with my wife. When I go back home, I have the same problem, because of course, like, my mom wants to cook for me and so on and so forth. But I told her, Mom, you can't cook for me, but we can cook together.
Okay.
So then, like, I put the pot on the fire, and I put the first oil on the and the first step of cooking, and then she continues cooking with the challah. Is he okay?
Because for Ashkenazim.
For Sephardim.
No.
For Sephardim, it's more complicated.
Yeah.
But you don't have.
Only the first cooking has to be done.
Okay. Say there. Let's leave the halacha. Guys, we said we're not going into halacha. Fine. So that's a nice idea. I want to suggest something else, which is good in general in life. Sometimes we have to be actors. The halacha says that if one's child needs a scolding, then if one is upset, one may not scold him. One may only scold him when one is in full control. And then when he's in full control, he has to raise his voice and show like he's angry and play game. So sometimes we're supposed to act. Many times in life, it's handy to be an actor. So I'll suggest something, and maybe I'll exaggerate it, and then from that you'll infer where it's an exaggeration and where it's not. Imagine a guy who comes home and he's all distraught. Don't believe it. I don't know what I'm going to do. He starts crying. His mother says, John, what's wrong? What's wrong? I can't tell you, Ma. It's terrible. You know, if there's one person in the world whose cooking I adored, if there's one person who's always made the best things in the world, it's you, Ma. I don't know what to do. Charlie, what's the problem? Never mind, Ma. We'll talk about it a different time. I can't talk about it now. Charlie, calm down. It can't be so bad. No, Ma, it's bad. It's bad. I really don't know, you know, if I've ever had to put up with difficult things before. This one's really good. This one takes the cake. I don't know how I'm going to do it. You get the picture? Okay. So sometimes in life, you got to be an actor.
The only problem with that is the idea of bringing a bad name to Yadut, which would, I mean, at least in our minds, directly related to the concept of Chilul Hashem.
Oh, so aside from being an actor, we have to be tactful, and sometimes we have to think how to present things. I wouldn't start talking to her about the issue of trust. That's not the point. I would talk to her about other aspects, and maybe not even go into the details. Like maybe say, Ma, look, I can't tell you. I don't understand it, but there are things which the halacha builds in a certain way, and at this point I'm just going to have to accept them. Sometimes we can avoid the whole issue. I don't have to have an answer. And sometimes I'm better off when I don't have an answer. Sometimes I'm better off when I say, your guess is as good as mine. I don't understand this halacha yet. You know, I'm accepting things. This one's really tough on me, and I really don't know how we're going to do it. We don't even have to assume we're going to do it yet. Let the other side, come on, you believe in this. You've given up so much for this. Let's figure out a way to work it out. there are ways to move forward. Sometimes the best way is not to come even as though it's a given. Like, I don't know how we're going to do this. I don't know. Come on, you're my mother. And depending on the scenario, if you build it correctly and your mother knows how important it is for you, you're maintaining the halacha and how much you've given up for it, so then I think in many instances, one can rest assured that his mother is going to say, don't give up, come on. You've done everything else for this. Let's figure out a way to do it that it'll work. And then she's the one. You always want to get the other side pushing in that direction. And I think it's also important if we could find a nice explanation to share the nice explanation. And where we can't, so we don't always have to have answers. Sometimes, I don't know, sometimes it's better. This is true in many things in life. Sometimes, there was once a negotiation between an American company and a Japanese company in a multi-million dollar project. The American company prepared this whole elaborate video explaining its case, why the price had to be a certain very high price. The Japanese sat down and watched the whole video. And after 5 hours, the other side says, so you understand? You understand why this is the price? So the Japanese negotiator looked at him and said, I didn't understand that well. Can we see it again? Sometimes your strength is in not understanding. I don't understand. I don't know. I don't know. You don't know. I don't know. This is the way it is. I don't know. We don't always have to have answers. So now, to review everything we've discussed today, in short, we discussed the true connection that one has, whether one likes it or not, with one's family, with one's parents, with one's upbringing. We discussed that a person is going to feel very natural there, and sometimes this can cause a person to view the life that he's adopted as unnatural and unreal. And we discussed that forewarned is forearmed. Certain things a person can do to try and preclude that situation. A person can try and avoid the situation when he can. A person can try and limit the situation. We discussed people who did not, and unfortunately, they were brought down. A person has to recognize the challenges. A person has to recognize the different tools he has to deal with it. Sometimes the tools are going to be to learn while one is there. Sometimes the tools are going to be to maintain a chavruta, to maintain a kesher, to talk to someone while one's there. I had guys when they went to Chutz Lartz, every day we'd learn. They said, I'm going, I don't know how I'm going to make it back. You have to promise you're going to learn 5 minutes a day on Skype where we see one another. So where we could, we did it. I couldn't always do it. Sometimes Javorin does it. There are many ways to do it. Sometimes a person can pair up with Chabad in the neighborhood or the rabbi in the neighborhood. All these solutions are somewhat of a solution. They're good, but they're not really going to solve the problem at its core. We have to be aware of the problem and find different ways to contend with it. We said to try and avoid philosophical arguments. No person can be confident that he could stand up to the arguments. Our sages weren't confident that they could, nor should anyone else. A person doesn't have to show like he knows everything. Rather, it's better for a person to be truthful and say, I don't know the answer to many things. We discussed that non-Jewish friends or friends who are Jewish but irreligious will definitely have an impact. A person has to know how to deal with it. A person has to recognize that it's a problem. What the solution is will depend on who the person is and where he's holding in life. The ideal, ultimate situation is that a person evolves to a state where he does not have them as his main friends. He might maintain a certain contact with them. He might wish them happy birthday by their birthday, but these aren't the friends he hangs out with when he comes back home or in general. We discussed that when there's instances that the parents disagree with the path we're going, so then it depends on what. We shouldn't fight World War III over something that doesn't deserve a war, and by the same token, we don't have to give in on things that are principles to us. We said that it's best to explain in advance, and when we're there, we have to be tactful. The more we can think in advance, the more we can prepare in advance. It's good to talk to people who have experience, be it other guys here, be it Rabbeim here. The more experience a person has, the more advice he's going to be able to give us. We said that sometimes the best tactic is, I don't know, I'm not responsible to know the answer to everything. And sometimes we have to think of a tactful way to present things, including sometimes acting. And we discussed that sometimes people feel like they're judged even though they aren't judged, and we have to break the cycle. We shouldn't feel like they're judging us. We have to learn how to approach positively and see how we could break the cycle and impart a positive attitude. Basically, we are done for tonight.